Lots happening in the news today, but we also have an opportunity to take a look back at some of the very interesting stuff that's been happening out there. And one of them is some analysis, I guess, on what was behind the election we just had here in Ontario. The good people at Navigator have put some thought into this and have come up with, I guess we could call it kind of an after-action report, for lack of a better term, on what had actually happened. Now that the election's over, we've had a chance to see the polls, we've talked to what the voters were, we kind of have you have a better of a sense afterwards, obviously, than you do what's happening before it. Jamie Watt is the executive chairman of Navigator Limited. He's here with me now on The Exchange. Jamie, great to talk with you again, and thanks for your time. You guys, I have to say I'm impressed. You turned around this report pretty quickly.
Well, thanks. It was a ton of work. I've got an amazing team here at Navigator. But this wasn't our first rodeo. We've done this six times before. We've got a really simple idea, which is that Election Day is the most accurate poll of all time, 100% accuracy. Mm-hmm. But then we got to go and figure out, why did people make the choice they did? And that'll tell us a little bit about how we can expect the government to act. And this time we found out some really interesting things. People talked about this being a change election. Everyone was writing about change, change, change. But what really happened was the voter changed. And the voter changed from having an interest in, big projects, things that affected the economy, building a more inclusive society, to really micro things. And it was all about their own pocketbook. It was all about their own family. It was also, in some ways, it was a selfish vote. They want to look after themselves more than they wanted to build a better place.
Well, yeah, I think it's an interesting insight as well, because, I mean, to the point you're making there, how many times had we been told it was a real centerpiece often of either the Liberal or the NDP campaigns of, some of us are going to pay a little bit more, but we're going to be making life better on those who need it most. I'd heard just anecdotally over the years people saying, I want to keep more of my taxes. Like, sure. I want to feel like what I'm making is benefiting my family here.
Totally.
And it finally actually manifested in a vote.
It did. I would say that point of view, would be, what people would say these days would be hashtag epic fail. There was a complete abandonment of that point of view. People don't want all these crazy projects. They want, and the best example is this. They don't care about the greening of the grid, of the electricity grid and all that kind of thing. They want their damn hydro bills down. And, people have not had much in the way of wage increases in the last number of years. So that when gas is going up and electricity prices are going up, people are having a hard time. One woman told us, she's a single mom and she works at a low-income job. She's doing her best. She's a great mother, raising her family as best she can. She says she's scared to open her hydro bill. She leaves it unopened because she's so terrified of what it's going to say. Well, that's no good.
When we take a look at that, not to put too fine a point on this, Jamie, but did the Liberals have a chance? I mean, was there any way they could have gone about this to try and say, we feel your pain, we know what you're saying, and we're going to pivot here? Or was this a Tory NDP race from the outset?
Well, I mean, I think obviously if they had made different choices, they might have been able to. But given the strategic choice they made, which made a lot of sense at the time, which was to pivot left and try and hoover up those NDP votes, they sort of inadvertently got themselves in a tricky position. And I think you overlay on that 15 years of service, and then as a wise person once said to me when I was losing. Really a campaign, losing it really badly, they said to me, Jamie, sometimes it doesn't matter what you do, they just want someone else. So I think those things were both militating against the Liberals this time out.
One of the things you'd noted in this report is not just that the voters wanted change in their circumstances, change for their families and their own incomes, but they want it really quickly here. And something you'd been talking about was how there's a real urgency to see Doug Ford come in and get started immediately. And I'll let you expand on that point. But you know what it reminded me of when I was reading some of your report and some of the interviews you've given about it? Do you remember how when Kathleen Wynne was newly elected, like she spent like a year talking with Ontarians and it was being sold as this incredibly virtuous thing? Well, we're striking panels, we're forming committees, we're gathering facts, but it just seemed for like a year and a half, nothing was happening because she was talking to Ontarians. What you're seeing now is that Ontarians want someone to come in immediately and get to work.
Well, let me give you an example of what I remember, because I do remember that, and that is so far off beam right at the moment that if Doug Ford tried to say that he was going to have consultation or whatever, people's view was, Doug, we've told you what we want you to do. Day one, bring in the auditors. Day two, cut the gas tax, whatever. This reminds me back all the way back, and I know it's ancient history for many, but all the way back to 1995, when on his very first day in power, Mike Harris announced the end of photo radar. Now, was photo radar the most important issue facing the province of Ontario at that time? Obviously not. But it was a signal that he wasn't going to sit around and waste time doing things that he knew that the people who elected him wanted him to do.
We've heard from Doug Ford already that one of his first things in office would be to begin the process of firing the $6 million man. You know, deliverables like that might not radically change how we live in Ontario, but it'll send a message early.
It will, and people are mixed on that. They do support some kind of action against some people within the province, but they also are practical about it, and they don't want to do things that are going to put contracts at jeopardy and cost lots of money and just be knee-jerk reactions. So I think that one is a little bit more complicated than people might otherwise think. What's not complicated is bringing in tax cuts. What's not complicated is reducing the price of gas. What's not complicated is bringing in the auditors and that sort of thing. Macro projects out, micro projects, which affect my pocketbook, my family's purse, and us on a very basic level. That's what they want Doug Ford to attend to.
Jamie, when you take a look at this, what I'm curious about here, obviously, as many of the analysts and the pundits have already noted, myself included, I'll disclose that, the Conservatives ran on a very limited menu option of election choices, right? I mean, they kind of said they had a couple of priorities. They were sticking to it. It was a very typical Doug Ford campaign. You pick a couple of winning issues and you run the hell out of them and you don't offer a full suite of proposals. Now that he's in, though, and, you know, he'll do the things you're saying. He'll get those quick wins. He's going to eventually, in year two or three, need to come up with a broader governing agenda here. Based on what you have seen from what the people actually wanted here, in order to keep an agenda in line with the voter preferences here, what would that kind of agenda look like here? After you've brought in the auditors, after you've cut the taxes, what's the next step that would be hopefully pleasing the base?
So you're quite right. He did run on a limited number of files. He only ran on those issues that he needed to run on to win. And that was a very, very clever strategy. But it does leave open what's he going to do on a whole bunch of other issues. What's not open, though, and why I don't think I'd worry about it, is that the frame, right, through which he is to govern is very well established, right? The frame of what people expect, which is not to go on fancy big projects running all over the place, but to fix the small things, get the government working, cut the waste, give them economic relief or whatever. As long as he puts every idea that they haven't, you know, thought about so far through that frame, he's going to be just fine. And I think the converse holds true as well, which is to forget that. And I think his base will be very, very unhappy. So I think he knows what he's got to do. They just have to keep thinking about it through the frame of everything that they were given on election night.
One last question for you here, Jamie, here, and obviously it's a bit counterfactual, but we'll get your thoughts on this. Having seen what the voters wanted, having seen how the Conservatives were able to exploit that and run with it and build it into a winning campaign, I know that our friends in the NDP obviously are very disappointed with how the campaign went, especially because the polls, at least for a while, had been suggesting they would do better. If you are an NDP partisan, if you're part of their war room doing kind of the postmortem on the campaign, knowing what we know now and what you guys at Navigator have figured out, what is the takeaway for them? What were their missed opportunities?
I think they were not able to close the deal with voters. You know, they had an opportunity to. And I think it's something that they're going to have to try and figure out. And I don't presume to tell them, but I can point out where the problem is. In the last election, they were roundly criticized for moving too close to the middle. And that didn't work out very well. So this time, Ms. Horvath took her party back to more traditional NDP values and NDP roots, and that worked quite well. But an example of where it didn't work so well was her insistence on The promise never to use back to work legislation. And what our research tells us is when she was adamant about never using back to work legislation, that reminded people of a rigid, doctrinaire approach to governing that wasn't practical enough and wasn't flexible enough for what they thought the province needed. If you think back to the last financial crisis with Stephen Harper and Jim Flaherty, you know, they were totally against deficits. They ran deficits. They were totally against buying car companies. They bought car companies. But they did it because they felt that they had to do it in the circumstance. And when she said she would never, ever even consider it, I think that became very difficult for people. And that's when, and if you look at the polling, which we know has got some issues, but that does seem that that's when her upward tick stopped, when people said, you know what, that's just too doctrinaire for me.
Jamie, appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much for this.
My great pleasure. Thanks for calling.
All right. Take